it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Rochelle, Rochelle, and she joins us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Do you like that introduction, Rochelle?
I love it so much. Don't you think it captures my essence?
I do. It's sort of whimsical yet informative.
And sort of a little bit pugnacious.
Yes, I think all of that. Well, we're glad you're back on the show, and I don't know if you heard any of the previous segment, but I know one piece of your prior career was you had the Minneapolis City beat from the Star Tribune, and you reported on Minneapolis City policies and politics, right? Isn't that right?
I was at Minneapolis City Hall for 7 years, from 2000 to, I guess, 2007-ish.
So I have to ask this thing. We were talking about the precarious state, the documentary that was on last night.
Right.
Rick Coachella's behind it. And I should say there's been a number of listeners who've texted in wanting to know who funded it and how it got on the air. I don't know the funders, but it was privately funded. And I suspect it's people who have some kind of perspective on Minneapolis. But I think Rick, if he was still on the line, would say he tried to focus on data and not put too much, spin on it. But did you watch it, Rochelle? And did you have a reaction to it?
No, it just came out. I haven't watched it, but I did see that I actually was just sort of, I think some of the people who were complaining about things in Minneapolis had a similar sort of sky is falling attitude. When I showed up at Minneapolis City Hall in April of 2000. So I think some of the folks who were captured on, now I haven't seen it.
All right.
But I think some of the folks captured on camera had a similar sort of doom and gloom outlook for the city. So, and it's still there. But I mean, obviously things have changed a lot. And I'm glad I no longer cover City Hall on a daily basis.
Yeah. Well, you were formerly a reporter. Now you're a columnist who can express a little more opinion. I know you're still trying to be even handed with that. But do you have a view of, the premise of Rick's documentary was basically relative to similarly situated cities, even factoring in COVID, that it's lagging in various measurements of jobs and crime and education and other things. Do you have a view of whether that's gotten worse or whether there's something new afoot in Minneapolis that would make it its relative standing slip so badly, if that's the case?
Yeah, I mean, the government at City Hall, it certainly seems, I don't know what numbers we're talking about. I mean, in some ways, I have colleagues trying to buy homes in Minneapolis as we speak, and that's very very, very difficult. So there are still people wanting to move to Minneapolis, regardless of whatever's going on there. So that's one anecdotal indication that the city's doing just fine. But I will say the government at City Hall is that's my dog Duke, by the way. Aww. Is a bit of the government of City Hall definitely is a head scratcher to me. It certainly seems. I mean, we throw around the word dysfunctional a lot in regard to government, but I guess I find it a little confounding, and I also find it confounding that the DFL party can't seem to manage to run a convention that is locked down and above reproach. I mean, we're still talking about that in the mayoral race. Well, early voting is open, and they're still disputing the endorsement. So that would seem problematic to me. And I mean, I'll say this: I said it back then, and I say it now. I just don't think. And whether you think this is one party or not, but I don't think one party rule is good for anybody. I think having two parties, a healthy minority, a majority. I mean, I've seen that across covering various levels of government. You want that. You want that tension, disagreement leads to better legislation. And what's going on at City Hall, I'm not entirely sure. It just seems doesn't seem great. I mean, all the people I covered back in the day kind of, I think, tend to agree with me. I don't know that any of them would really, the majority of them wouldn't fit in that environment. It was a much more pragmatic crew on the city council. Not entirely, but there definitely were some firm-handed pragmatists. And, you know, Mayor Archie Rybak came into office, and he had a clear ideas about what he wanted to do and was able to communicate those. And so I don't know. It's confounding, and I don't spend a lot of time at City Hall anymore. And I don't really want to. So,
all right.
It's wild. It's just kind of mind blowing to me.
We're talking to Rochelle Olson, who's a columnist for the Minnesota Star Tribune. And she does a column weekly that I think is a lot of fun and interesting. It's an interesting read. It's called Cheers and Jeers. And she goes through sort of jeers, of course, being a little sort of skeptical or negative, and cheers being somebody to get kudos for something good. And we'll take a break in a minute, but we'll do one of these before we go to break. And speaking of dysfunctional, my party, you know, the Republican Party, it might be having a new candidate enter the governor's race. People know him as the pillow guy, Mike Lindell. Yeah. And you gave jeers to this idea this week, Rochelle. How come?
Well, come on. I mean,
yes, I agree. I admit it.
The last Republican, and this is my joke, by the way, that I'm going to throw out there right now because I won't be able to get, I couldn't get it in last time, but I would like to know what the hell Tim Pawlenty did that turned everyone off on Republicans statewide.
Whoa.
I know it's a little harsh, but I'm basically at my core, I'm a Tim Pawlenty fan. I can say that now.
You're nice.
But I mean, look at you compared to, and it's not fair to ask you to compare yourself to this guy, but you compared to Mike Lindell. I mean, come on. Come on.
Yeah, but you wrote about it in sort of specific terms. And by the way, I can't imagine even in its current state my party would endorse him for office, but I suppose anything's possible.
Well, dude, you know who they endorsed? They endorsed Royce White for U.S.
Yes,
Senate.
Yes, and
so
and
this
of course,
is not you know, beyond. This is not beyond the out of the question.
But you referenced his. Yeah, I agree with you. By the way, I agree with you in that score. But you said it's a mind-blowing level of delusion, which I think was great writing, great phrase. But self-awareness is not a strong suit of many politicians or would-be politicians. And do you think he doesn't understand his sort of how people view him generally, or do you think he just doesn't care, or he's just damn the torpedoes full steam ahead? I mean, what's your theory?
My theory would be, maybe both, that he doesn't care. I mean, I bet you're the same way. I couldn't drive my car if my tabs were expired. I would sit at home and wait for those things to arrive in the mail. But here is a guy who's facing serious legal troubles and financial troubles on multiple fronts. And he's all, I'm the guy for this job. I mean, seriously, does that come from? I can't even begin to guess where that comes from.
Right. Well, politics attracts some interesting folks, to put it mildly. Well, Rochelle, we're going to take a short break. We're going to be back with the columnist from the Minnesota Star Tribune, and we're going to talk more about Cheers and Jeers, which is a great, fun, interesting column every week. And we'll be back after this break.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Chad Hartman Show, noon to three every weekday. Chad's not here today. He's out playing golf. We'll just be blunt about it. He cares more about golf than he does about his listeners. So I'm here caring for you, each and every one of you, and glad to be doing
so. It's accurate.
He doesn't.
Wow.
I'm joking. Chad loves his listeners, and he loves the job. His passion shows it. He's great at it. We're talking to Rochelle Olson. She is a columnist for the Minnesota Star Tribune. We mentioned she's got a weekly column called Cheers and Jeers, and there's a lot of fun and interesting things that go into it. Just one other word, because the people who are texting in have a lot of interesting thoughts. By the way, if you want to text in, it's 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226, the WCCO talk and text line. And a number of texters have said, you know, basically, Pawlenty, you're not MAGA, and you don't understand the party of today. I concede openly and acknowledge that the Republican Party nationally is fully MAGA, and that has led to them currently being a national majority governing party, both the House and Senate controlled by Republicans, and same with the president. So I understand that. But as applied to Minnesota, not just as applied to Minnesota, we've had the leader of the MAGA movement, President Trump. He's run three times here, 2016, 2020, 2024. And as Rochelle, you mentioned in your article, and lost three times. And again, that's not a criticism of President Trump. Every Republican loses in Minnesota at the presidential level for a long, long time. But it just goes to show that if you offer the Minnesota voters just MAGA, it's probably not going to be enough. And so that's all I'm trying to say. It has to be something additional, more slightly different, and it can't just be MAGA only. So back to the article, Rochelle. You also mentioned somebody you like in the legislature. Our listeners may not have heard of him, but he's House Majority Leader Harry Nisca. Great person, I think. But you kind of gave a cheers to him. How come?
Well, earlier this week, when Walz was still in Ireland, the governor Walz was still in Ireland, they apparently had some negotiations on. Walz wants an assault, a special session, and he wants an up or down vote on an assault weapons ban. And Representative Nisca, House Majority Leader, stood up at a press conference and said there are zero votes for this in our caucus in the House. And Lisa Daymuth, the speaker, was there as well. So props to her, too. But it happened to be Nisca who said it. And I mean, I think, and I think you would agree as well. I mean, there's a lot to be said for being honest and for showing you they're not trying to be cute or say something. They're not wasting people's time. And so with dishonesty or blame, I mean, they're just flat out saying this is where we are. And when people are honest like that, I mean, that's a starting point, I think, for, I don't know where it's going to lead, but honesty is good.
Yeah. Yeah. And transparency is good too. And you get not as much as you'd like in politics.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I will say, just adding to sort of cheers to Harry Nisca, I know him a little. I was talking to a high ranking Republican leader there not long ago about the dynamics in the legislature as it relates to Republicans. I said, is there anybody there who you know won't double deal you, won't stab you in the back, you know, as somebody in a leadership position that you can really trust and just kind of tells it like it is. And that person flagged Harry Nisca to fit that description. So kudos to your cheers. I'll add my kudos to House Majority Leader Harry Nisca for being blunt-spoken, plain-spoken, and
that's
honest.
Good to hear. That's good to hear. I love hearing people say that about politicians, especially those who are in prominent positions.
Yeah. Now, you also flag a number of other things, but let's go to another jeers. And you have given a jeers to our to our pro sports teams, the swift falls of our sports teams. But I'll add to that cheers, a simultaneous cheers to Minnesota Lynx star Nafisa Collier, who I think has been in the news. Some people may not have followed it, but I think that's definitely worth highlighting.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and I think I've cheered her before, and it's kind of hard not. I think I want to cheer her a lot because I think she stood up after the Lynx lost, and I mean she could have gone up there and complained about the call that sort of the no call in the game where she was injured, but she spoke to the greater issues in the league with not just the refereeing but the pay. They're coming up soon on the negotiations for their collective bargaining agreement, and she's the vice president, I believe, of the union. And so she kind of set the table and had some very, she had it written out, harsh words for the commissioner, basically sort of saying the commissioner wasn't working on behalf of the players and sort of wasn't bridging that divide. And it was, again, just a really powerful, bold statement. She's Nafisa Collier is going to be a star, whether she, regardless of what she negotiates, right, because of her skills on the court. But to use that platform for the great, for to speak up for everyone else in the league and everybody who's going to come after you, I mean, after in terms of following her in the league, not, you know what I mean, the future players in the league and sort of trying to build the league. I just thought that was really bold and powerful to speak truth to power in that way. And I think she's definitely, I wouldn't be surprised to see her end up as commissioner someday when her playing days are over. I mean, she's seems like a real force for good in the world in all sorts of ways. And that's just extraordinary for someone. She's not that old, right?
Yeah. And she seems strong. Strong, not just a great player, but a strong communicator. She's got leadership skills. And
right.
I don't know her, but people who I do know her, who I've heard comment about her, say she is not prone to hysteria or, you know, to exaggerate or whatever. She's just very direct, you know, informed, strong, clear, and especially when you're taking on the commissioner of your own league, those are good traits.
Well, and I think we've seen that. I mean, like you said, you don't know her. I don't know her either. I've never met her, but you see it in how she conducts herself. I mean, and you see what people write about. I mean, she's just sort of above reproach. She's just a real pro, and I'm just curious to see where her life and career takes her from this point forward. I think we'll be hearing a lot about her.
Do you consider yourself a Vikings fan, Rochelle?
Well, I grew up here, like yourself, and I mean, wouldn't you say it was kind of unavoidable?
Well, of course. But some people, it's sort of visited upon them, and other people embrace it and dive into the deep end of the Vikings purple pool. And I'm in the latter category, but it's worrisome to see the quarterback go down, their whole offensive line go down on the heels of the Lynx loss. Now we got a Vikings situation that looks, at least for the moment, pretty challenging.
Well, sure. I mean, I don't know the finer points of football, but I do feel like I've covered the Vikings in terms of, and I know a lot of people, like their front office. I've known them for years because of writing about stadiums and stuff. And frankly, the thing that people may not know about the Vikings is they've always been a real pleasure to deal with. I don't deal with the players. I don't deal with the coaches. I deal with the front office people. And they've always been delightful to deal with and just respectful. And it's a fun relationship for me in my professional career. So I have a lot of respect for them in that regard. But I also feel like the NFL, I mean, what's the line from the, and we're talking about the league that owns a day of the week. It's sort of like every year I think this is the year I'm going to do something more important on Sundays. But it's sort of unavoidable. I mean, it's just part of the spectacle. I mean, I'm not going to live or die whether the Vikings lose or win. That's for sure. But it's kind of why not enjoy the show? That's
well,
where
we love all of our sports teams in Minnesota, but the purple looms large for sure. But well, we'll have to wrap it up for this week. That is another installment of Cheers and Jeers with the Minnesota Star Tribune columnist Rochelle Olson. Rochelle, have a great weekend. Enjoy this weather, and we'll see you down the trail shortly.
Yes. Thanks.
Okay, there you go. WCCO Radio, we're going to take a short break and be back right after this.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Chad Hartman Show. In for Chad today, me, Tim Pawlenty, and we're glad you're listening to us on this beautiful fall Minnesota afternoon. And boy, we had some nice weather, Dave Harrigan, these last few weeks to enjoy. It's a bonus time in our great state.
It's been pretty good after what was kind of a shaky summer, I would say, earlier. A lot of wetness, a lot of smoke. We were just talking about this with Chad the other day, about middle August. It's been flawless.
Yeah, and you're so Minnesotan. You say it's been pretty good. You know, you're modest. You kind of understated a little bit. How about it's been flipping fantastic,
okay,
Dave?
Okay, flipping fantastic. I will give that to you.
It's been
I'm a little humid that one day, you know.
It hasn't been a dry heat. It's been a little humid on certain days.
Pretty dry now, though.
Oh, man.
Just a touch of the humidity, but this is not like the July heat we're certainly used to here.
Yeah. Now, Minnesotans, but in addition to the weather, they like to talk mostly about a few other things, one of which, especially in the fall, is the Minnesota Vikings. You and I were talking during the break about how optimistic we all were with this new quarterback who could have a lot of upside, unknown but hoped for upside, a retooled offensive line where we brought in all these former All-Pros. We got an All-Pro tight end in Hockenson. We got two great wide receivers with Addison and Jefferson. We got this new effective running back, Jordan Mason. They've upgraded the defense. It's like, man, this could be really something this year.
That's right. Adam Thielen really back in the mix.
Adam
Thielen,
Detroit
the
agent, it's kind of a homer thing, but still, who doesn't like Adam Thielen?
Sure.
But it all looked so hopeful, and maybe still will be, but at the moment, the offensive line is decimated. They have almost no starters left for Sunday morning, our time, for the game coming up against Cleveland.
They've got two.
Yes, but you know, we've got a quarterback, Wentz, who's, you know, arguably so far serviceable, but isn't exactly, you know, setting the world on fire with his quarterbacking skills. He's sort of, you know, journeyman at this point in his career.
Fine,
yeah,
I would say.
But Cleveland has a really good defense.
They do.
And they're going to put in a first-time rookie quarterback, which we could exploit. But anyhow, Dave, your quick thoughts on how you feel about the purple going into this weekend. I'm worried. I'd like to see how you feel. And then we're going to talk about, if you could watch a Vikings game or a Wild game anywhere in the world, that you could pick the place, where would it be?
Yeah, well, I have a friend who I saw was in Ireland for the Dublin game. That's kind of why I thought of this.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big trip. That's a
yeah,
big trip.
Yeah.
But as far as the Sunday, boy, you have to be happy that the Browns are throwing a rookie quarterback out there, right?
That could be our saving, you know, could be our ace in the hole.
Yeah, I mean, not that Joe Flacco, 40 years old, was exactly lighting the world on fire for Cleveland. Their offense was struggling much more than even the Vikings has been at times. But, ooh, boy, a rookie. And, you know, Brian Flores, the defense, they always say. You know,
B-flow.
Yeah, see, you know it. you know the lingo. For a young guy who hasn't seen all the looks and all the changes that they can do, showing something and doing something else. It seems like a tough time to be a rookie quarterback when you're, you know, traveling across the pond to take on a defense like that can mix things up for you. But you have to be concerned about what the offense is going to be able to do. I mean, with the offensive line that hasn't been great, missing all these guys now, obviously, you know, Addison back now after missing the first few weeks. Wentz maybe one more week more comfortable, at least in the game plan. You'd have to hope, even against the Browns' defense, they'll be able to move the ball a little bit, hopefully enough, because the Browns don't score. And if that remains the case with the rookie, you got to think the Vikings have a pretty good shot this week, right?
I hope so. I don't.
Or are you a Minnesota Vikings fatalist like the rest of us?
Well, I have been. I did have touched the stove a few times emotionally with the Vikings, and my wife says, and she's a huge Vikings fan, but she says never underestimate the Vikings' ability to disappoint you.
It's true, especially with rookie quarterbacks or unknown quarterbacks going against. The Vikings have a long history of making them look a lot better than any other team does.
Now, I was in Vegas a few weekends ago, and I won't tell you all about my Vegas trip, but it did involve, for me anyhow, a fairly substantial bet on the over-under, which is the total points scored in the Vikings game that weekend, and we won. I won. I wanted to throw my wife. Yes. I did lose on the bet on whether we'd win or lose the game, but the reason I share this with you is because the over-under for the Vikings this week is 36. That's the total projected points to be scored by both teams combined, cumulatively.
That is very low.
And it's the lowest over-under line in a Vikings game in, like, the modern history of the Vikings, and maybe in the NFL. I mean, it's not the absolute lowest, but it's nearly precedent-setting how low it is. So the expert odds makers are predicting a relatively low-scoring game.
Yeah.
And that's not a surprise, I guess, with a rookie quarterback and a tough Cleveland defense.
Yeah, it is. 36, that's incredible. I mean, a couple fluke plays is really all you need to beat that. So either it's going to be about a 13-9 game, Or it'll be a, you know, one of those crazy things where it's 52-49, just an absolute shootout.
The NFL has the capacity to surprise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's talk about that other question quick before we take a break. If you, Dave Harrigan, could watch a Vikings game anywhere in the world, it couldn't be in the United States, had to be outside the United States, and we'll say outside of Canada or Mexico too, just to make it more exotic, where would you want to go to watch a game?
Ooh, outside of the U.S.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. The Dublin game would have been cool just because I've been to Ireland a couple times. That would be fun. But I could see having some fun watching the Vikings in Australia.
Australia?
I think they would get the sport. I don't know why, but I just feel that way. That, you know, they got the Aussie rules football. They've, mm-hmm. you know, they're big on the rugby and stuff like that. So they'd probably be into it a little bit. A nice violent game of hitting and trying to move the ball. I would think Australia would be a fun trip to go see the Purple. Now, I'm not taking the flight there just to watch the Purple. I'll have to be there for about 10 days, and the Vikings will be there, you know, midway. I'll see the game, but do other stuff. But that would be a cool place, I think, to watch a Vikings game.
You know, I agree with that. No, I shouldn't stereotype, but
go ahead.
Dave Harrigan, Ireland, was in your background like an O'Harrigan, O-apostrophe Harrigan, anything like that?
O'Harrigan, Mick Harrigan.
Yeah.
There is plenty of Irish blood that's flowing through my veins right now, yes.
Yeah, nice. Well, I thought about this just very quickly, and I always kind of go to the comical or the whimsical. So I thought, what if we had a Vikings game in like Dubai, and all the Middle Easterners were in their traditional garb doing the skull chant or singing along with Neil Diamond, you know, one of the Neil Diamond songs. That would be kind of fun.
That'd be interesting.
Or I wonder if they'd allow the Vikings cheerleaders there, given their strict cultural norms.
That could be a trouble theme. I know.
Although in Dubai, Dubai's pretty,
yeah,
you know, unlike the rest of the Middle East.
Maybe cover up just a little bit more, perhaps. I don't know. That could be interesting. But I was thinking about the question, too, for just other teams. You know, our other teams, the Wolves, Wild.
And yeah, what about it?
For the Wolves, I'll keep this stateside. A Wolves game in L.A. against the Lakers or New York City, Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
Just to kind of get the feel of those environments would be pretty cool. You know, obviously all the stars out in L.A. or if you go to Madison Square Garden, just obviously you're in Madison Square Garden watching an NBA game number one. But, you know, Spike Lee sitting courtside or something like that. Those would be cool. And you always hear hockey players talk about the environment you get is completely different in Montreal. Montreal in hockey is just a different thing, even more so than, you know, in Toronto. Toronto, obviously another Canadian city, but to go and follow the Wild, take on the Canadiens in Montreal and just pick up the, you know, the feelings that you get walking into that arena with those fans that view hockey, you know, we state of hockey, greatest, you know, PR tagline that anyone's ever come up with in the history of Minnesota sports. But man, they are the city, the province of hockey, whatever you want to call it. I would think that would be very cool just to get the feeling of what the game would be like watching it surrounded by Montreal fans.
I agree with that. And I'll tell you a quick hockey story. When I was done being governor, I had become acquainted with the commissioner of the NHL, Gary Bettman, because he had been in Minnesota while I was governor for various things associated with the Wild. And
he's been the commissioner for about 85 years.
Charity things and a few ceremonial things with him. So I sort of was loosely acquainted with him back in the day. So after I was done being governor, I was in New York and I asked for a meeting with him and he accepted. He allowed me to come see him. And I told him somewhat seriously but somewhat jokingly, you know, my post-gubernatorial aspiration was to get his job, to be the NHL commissioner, because that would be like my dream job. I'd love to be the commissioner of the NHL. Of course, I'm probably not qualified for it. But nonetheless, it was aspirational.
A lot of people would argue neither is he.
And he said to me somewhat sternly at that time, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. So this was probably like, you know, 2011. So call it 14 years ago. And a week or two ago, I'm in New York, and I'm walking down the street, and guess who I run right into, Dave?
Gary Bettman.
Gary Bettman, still commissioner of the NHL. And we renew acquaintances quickly, and I said, I still want your job. And he said, I'm still not going anywhere. So that guy's been there forever.
Do you know what year he started? I just looked it up.
I don't.
February 1st of 1993. He's been there for 32 and a half years.
Well, and you think about who he works for. His board of directors, so to speak, are the owners of the NHL team. And these are not exactly, you know, lightweight business people. So sure. He must be doing something right to have their support for that long. And so I guess kudos to him, not only for longevity, but apparently doing a good job.
Yeah, I mean, the league's obviously had its ups and downs. Hockey can be a tough sport to push in some parts of America just because of climate and, you know, what people are interested in the game, grow up playing the game. But, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that at least right now in the last couple of years with the NHL getting back on ESPN, and the salary cap's going up in quite a way here. Seems like the league's in a pretty decent spot right now. So the guy who gets booed at every public appearance he ever makes by the fans, at least right now, I'm sure the owners have to like him.
Yeah, it's sort of true with the commissioner of the NFL, too. Well, we'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll actually talk about one aspect of this, was what's happening to cable television and sports and what that means for our Minnesota Twins and a few other related topics as well. On WCCO Radio, we'll be right back after this break. Welcome back on this beautiful fall Friday afternoon to WCCO Radio and the Chad Hartman Show. Tim Pawlenty subbing in for Chad as he's out enjoying this afternoon, a well-deserved break for him. Dave Harrigan, super producer, is with me. We were talking before the break about sports and TV and related topics. Dave, one thing that comes to mind is the challenge of a small market team, and I guess in this case really speaking about the Twins. You know, the Vikings have a salary cap. They have situations where they share television revenues across the league. So there's a sort of an equalizing effect on the revenues, just using that as an example. And baseball is the exact opposite. And the Twins, I think it's no secret that they have a very, to put it mildly, modest TV contract, which affects their revenues.
It's only gotten more modest.
Only gotten more modest. And, you know, there's been reporting recently that there's a handful of cable TVs channels that get significant viewership, including ESPN, but the rest of them basically don't. That the 50 or 70 or 100 or 200 other cable channels are very so niche that to almost be, I don't want to say irrelevant, but it's a very difficult thing to be on anything but the five or six, you know, most premier cable channels, assuming you're not on broadcast all the time. And I don't know what the Twins are going to do about that, or for that matter, other sports teams facing that dilemma. I don't want to just pick on the Twins, but it's such an important part of making a team viable from a revenue and expenditure standpoint. And you're somebody who follows, I think, the Twins closely. Obviously, WCCO has a partnership with them. Where does this head from here, do you think?
It's got to head to a streaming platform, obviously, eventually. Not everybody's there yet. People still like to watch the Twins on TV when they're watchable. That helps. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned this, the amount of channels that matter on cable TV. And the column I was reading last night said, we're at five. You know, out of all the dozens, hundreds of channels you can get on cable TV now, it's the three big news ones, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, it's ESPN, and they would say HGTV is probably number five. You know, you look at like even Fox Sports 1 gets just a sliver of the viewers that ESPN gets. And the other channels are, you know, they get some viewers, but it's nothing to write home about. So it's pretty clear that cable TV is not the future. As people cut the cord, my family, we cut our cord several years ago.
Yep.
You know, when the kids were born, just realized we don't have time. We're not sitting watching. You know, I'd love to watch the local games, but other than that, I'm not watching TNT and TBS and HGTV on a random night because we're, you know, having dinner and getting the kids to bed. And by the time we're done with that, we're exhausted.
Well, and I add to that, you just look at, put some numbers on it. I'll just use Fox News and MSNBC, the two, you know, basically partisan channels. And there's two of the more successful channels on television as measured by viewership, Fox more than MSNBC by the numbers. But even those channels, we'll throw CNN in there as well.
Sure.
Their best shows at night, their primetime shows, assuming there's not some extraordinary news event, just the regular night, regular programming, in a country of 360 million people, they might get, if they're lucky, a couple million viewers at the max. And their daytime shows get less than a million. So they're just a few hundred thousand people watching nationally on cable TV, and the average age of those viewers is over 65 mm-hmm. or over. And no one or very few people under, say, 50 years old even watch live television unless it's a sporting event or some special event. And so they've all migrated to either on-demand platforms or social media. You know, there was a survey out the other day that TikTok, you know, accounts for 20% of the news that people consume, quote-unquote news, loosely, you know, configured. And if you disaggregate that data by age and you look at people under 30, it's about half, 50% of all the so-called news they consume is on a, until maybe a day in the near future, a Chinese-owned social media app. But the idea that what's happening on cable news or even cable television broadly is capturing the attention of most of the country is just statistically not true.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. It's or absolutely untrue, I should say. But you'd have to think these, you know, the sports leagues, all of them, maybe with the exception of the NFL, because they're still mostly on broadcast TV, and obviously the money they get is gargantuan for their product. But you have to think, I'd hope anyway, they're thinking ahead to life after cable, to when just cable TV contracts don't make sense anymore, to when it's only streaming. And you'd have to think the finances are going to be much less than they get or they have gotten in the past from cable TV contracts. Mm-hmm. Does that mean salary caps go back down for players? Does that mean owners just have to eat more costs if they want to stay in the game? You know, the Twins have, you know, they tried last year to push the product, Twins TV or whatever we called it, and, you know, get people to sign up for season packages or whatever. And, you know, there's only so much money you can spread around now through Netflix and Prime and Hulu and all of the streaming channels. And if you still do want to keep cable and, you know, your cost of internet, if you're using it mainly for things like social media or, you know, streaming videos on that, it's not gotten any cheaper. You know, cable we all complained about was getting too expensive. I get 200 channels. I only watch 8 of them, and I have to pay so much money for it. So we complained about it, and so everyone's going to streaming. Everyone's got a streaming service now. And if you want to get all of them, if you want to get half of them,
it's impossible
to cover what you used to watch. Yeah. You're paying as much, or in a lot of cases, probably more per month.
Yeah, it's impossible. I mean, there's a series we like called Slow Horses. It's I think on Apple Television. We have a few other platforms, but every time something good comes out, it's not on your platform. You're in this dilemma. If you want to watch it, you got to pay yet another subscription. I suppose you can cancel it 90 days or whatever. But
get your free trial and try to binge it within a week
and drop it. Hey, we're going to take a break in a minute, but David, one thing that came out of, just switching topics here, the president and secretary of war / defense.
Still defense, yes, I think.
He got a lot of coverage for the remarks to the generals gathering in Virginia at Quantico a couple days ago. And one thing pops out as I look at you here across the studio, and I see that you're growing a beard or trying to. The Secretary Hegseth referred to a group of people within the military, not the special operators, as beardos, people who have beards, but kind of suggesting that maybe they're a little weird. Are you trying to grow a beard?
I've had this for 20 years.
20 years.
I just always keep it short.
Yeah. And do you take any offense at the notion of having a beard makes you a little weird?
I don't take offense.
What do you think of that? I mean, how do you feel about that?
I feel like, you know what? I do the beard because I think it looks good, and my wife would not let me shave it off. She likes it too. So whatever makes her happy, I'm going to keep.
Well, I think, you know, you look around the number of people. Again, it's different inside the military in terms of how you look, but having a beard is very popular these days, especially.
Oh, yeah, especially absolutely. If you're into brewing beer. Then it's just a competition for who's got the longest and most ridiculous-looking beard.
Exactly.
Right?
That's exactly right. All right, this is Tim Pawlenty in for Chad Hartman talking to super producer Dave Harrigan. We're going to take a short break and be right back on WCCO Radio.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly outside of Cleveland, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.